Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 218 of the Fun with Cars Formula One podcast for coverage of the Brazilian Grand Prix from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'm Robin Warner, and I am once again joined by the effervescent, miraculous, and buoyant, quite buoyant, in fact, Chris Rose. Chris, how are you?
I am quite buoyant when I'm in the swimming pool, you're right, fortunately.
I have to say that those were a bit strained. I should have spent more time practicing those.
Yes, a bit like the Mercedes security during the Grand Prix weekend.
Oh, ouch, ouch. Solid burn, but ouch. Yeah, those poor guys. That was, Brazil, it's not the easiest place to hold a Grand Prix, is it?
Unfortunately not, because the fans seem to have a great time. It looks like an exciting place to go and watch racing, but that kind of thing puts you off a little bit, doesn't it? But it's a shame. I'm surprised the teams haven't stepped up security, because there were incidents a couple of seasons ago with a close shave for Jenson Button. I guess the FIA drive around in bulletproof cars, but the poor old mechanics are in a transit van. So, yeah, they need to think about their logistics a little bit more for that weekend.
Yeah, well, there's talks of that weekend not happening much anymore, and then maybe moving to Argentina. And, maybe we're going to hear a little bit more about the history of Fangio than Senna, if we do. But, it's troublesome, but at the same time, it is a brilliant racetrack, so you'd hate to see it go.
Yeah, it was a fun little weekend, wasn't it, all in all? Made a little bit more exciting by the rather embarrassing first lap Q1 crash by a certain four-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton.
Funny. Oh, okay, there was his name. I was going to say, it's funny you're not mentioning his name all of a sudden. But before we get to that, before we jump in, I did get some wonderful feedback from a longtime listener, Mr. Paul Peard, and he sent us an email. I'm just going to read it off to you. Just finished the latest podcast. Interesting discussions. Now, actually, in fact, it's not the latest podcast because I did do a motorsport miscellany in between these, but latest with both you and I, Chris. Here's my take on Bottas v. Verstappen in Mexico. I think it was a tactical call by Mercedes to not put pressure on Max. If Bottas could have caught and raced him, likely outcome would have been that one last remaining Renault engine gives up. Bottas moves to first, Raikkonen moves to second, Ferrari tell him to pit or otherwise move over to let Vettel by, to let Vettel through in second, championship still alive. Mercedes needed two cars in front of Ferrari, and given the first lap incident, they effectively needed Max to finish first or second, and if pushed, he may have not finished. Anyway, another perfectly timed podcast lasted his entire commute home. Thanks, guys. Paul. So, Chris, this is your first chance of getting non-Facebook feedback. So this is the first for you. Congratulations. Yay. Second, what did you think of Paul's comments?
Yeah, that's awesome observation. Definitely. It could have been tactical and that gives Bottas an out for being so slow and outpaced. So, maybe Paul's slightly Finnish in a previous life.
I'm pretty sure he's English, in fact. But maybe there's some ancestry that we don't know about. Who knows? Or maybe he's got investments. I don't know. But
there were a lot of Viking invasions back in the day. So, everyone's got a little bit of Viking in them.
Well, maybe that's why Amory and I were so compelled to have our wedding in Iceland. Who knows? Maybe there was blood running deep that we didn't know about. But anyway, yes, Brazil, yes, qualifying, yes, Q1, like the first 90 seconds of it almost. It was a little bit odd. I mean, I don't want to just chalk it up to focus, but it's hard not to at least bring it up that he's a bit relaxed, he doesn't have anything to worry about, so yeah, I'm just going to go out and, knock out another pole position real quick. Just gets the tidiest bit clumsy in a bad place, and that's that.
I think clumsy is a little harsh. I mean, certainly either he was caught out by the shower that occurred between FP3 and Q1, or, you know, just was a little offline or made a slight mistake on the entry. But, I mean, that car went very, very fast on him. I mean, and, you know, he got on the opposite lock pretty quick and the brakes, and it didn't save him. And, of course, curiously, later on in qualifying, Massa had a very similar incident at the same corner and managed to save it, although his was probably due to being offline entering the turn. But, yeah, I felt a little bit bad for Lewis in the sense that, you know, he looked so shamefaced afterwards. He just looked so embarrassed. It was priceless. Clearly, you know, he wasn't very proud of that. And, you know, didn't seem to be relishing the chance to fight through the field. But, you know, ultimately, I think he probably enjoyed his weekend more than if he'd got it on the front row or whatever and had a sort of Bottas-style trail behind Vettel the whole way.
Well, you know, what's interesting, though, in qualifying, the most fascinating moment I found in qualifying was, first of all, it was a great battle between Bottas and Vettel.
Mm-hmm.
Bottas came out on top, got the pole position.
Yeah.
And then there were a lot of cameras on this, like, you know, emo, life is pain, kind of like goth looking dude with his hoodie on, just kind of sombering around. And all of a sudden, that same goth looking dude walks up and, you know, gives Bottas a pat on the back. You're like, oh, that's Hamilton. And he you're right. He looked properly out of sorts. And I do give him credit for giving Bottas the nod of respect of like, hey, good job, you did it. I give him credit for being around in the first place because he had already done his mandatory talk with the press and all this. He didn't have to be there per se, at least from the public perspective that we see. And so I give him credit for that, but the look on his face was down. And I thought, my guess was that all of Lingeland was just a little bit sadder that afternoon.
I mean, you know, it's all done and dusted, isn't it? These are all bonus races. And I think ultimately, he just looked like he'd been put on the naughty step. I think he was so shocked to be out that early. And when you think about it, there was no need to push. He was going to comfortably get through Q1 and probably should have done more of a banker lap. And at the end of the day, if you're going to make a silly mistake, make it the race after you just clinched the championship, eh? So, yeah, that type of mistake has been absent from his driving up until this point in the season. So, but, you know, we've always known that he's had the capacity to drop the ball occasionally, and we were reminded of it in that qualifying session.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned the term banker lap, and that's why I use the word clumsy, because my guess was that he was going for a banker lap. This was the first couple minutes of Q1. I don't think he was pushing especially hard. I think that he was prepping himself for a banker lap and just, you know, I'll use a South Park term that you may or may not know. I think he French fried when he should have pizzaed. And that was that.
Okay. I really don't understand that.
We can call that an Americanism. And I will happily volunteer to explain it. So,
you know, if he had been eating pizza at the time, that would have been a bit more.
No, it's
made a little bit more sense.
It's far more clever than that, Chris. So,
okay,
pizza when you're supposed to French fry is from South Park, and it's from a ski instructor, like a ski bum instructor, teaching the South Park kids how to ski. And he's saying, when you want to go fast, you want your skis in a row like a pair of French fries. And when you want to slow down, you put the skis together in a point like a slice of pizza. So
if you want to slow down, you
have pizza. If you want to speed up, you have French fries. So I think he had French fries when he should have had pizza.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, certainly the car bottomed out like three or four times in the entry to that corner. which it didn't. It seemed to be on rails during the race. So, yeah, something a little bit strange. You know, he owned up. He said it was his mistake. Nothing wrong with the chassis. And I think he felt particularly bad because he'd come out and vocally supported his crew who'd been held at gunpoint earlier that day.
Yes.
And I think he probably wanted to deliver for them. So to put it right at the back of the grid probably wasn't what he had in mind. But, you know, he made amends for it. But, I mean,
Chris, you make a good point. Maybe that was for the crew. He's like, look, I really feel bad that you guys got held up at gunpoint. So, look, stay here all night, fix my car, and you'll be safe.
Well, that's right. Yeah, another good point. Stay at the track and you'll probably be
right. Like, I'll order some fish and chips. I'll have it come in. I found a fish and chip place, the only one in Sao Paulo, and they're gonna bring it for you. So no worries.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Well, that was very kind and generous of him, wasn't it? Good man.
Just really kept them safe. Let's give him a 3 cheers. What would be a good, like a nice huzzah, right? Maybe that's a good turn.
Hip hip, I think. Hip hip hooray would be the way you'd have to go for Lewis.
Okay. All right. So clearly we're getting more relaxed now that the championship's sewn up. The pole position that Bottas put in, that was a strong lap. And it did seem like, at least in the American coverage, that there was a lot of assumption that Vettel had the pole. And then Bottas pimped him, and that was a real nice moment for Bottas, and I think that was a nice, confidence booster. And I was happy for him.
Yeah, for sure, because I was surprised at the pace of the Mercedes right from the start of the weekend. I wasn't expecting this to be a Mercedes track. I had predicted Verstappen win, and surprisingly, the Red Bull really struggled throughout most of the weekend. The Mercedes were very, very strong. Ferrari was quickest through the twisty sector 2, but Mercedes was quick enough through 1 and 3 that they could pretty much match or even slightly better the Ferrari's time. And it was a very close run thing, and Bottas delivered, which, you know, he's had a rough old time since the summer break, by and large. And so that was a good return to form because he had outpaced Hamilton in free practice 3. So there was, you know, could have been a good battle for the pole with Hamilton as well if he'd kept it on the track.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fine performance by Bottas.
So how do you want to go over this? I just feel like chronological is the most sensible way here. There's no big headline that's standing out that makes me want to jump around. You know, other than actually, that's not true. well, it's not really a headline, but I do feel that, you know, we had a second time round, in fact, for this, but Felipe Massa having his emotional end to Formula One racing. And he had it again because he did it this time last year as well. But,
right.
This year there was a lot of, formality kind of built into the program. You know, Felipe Massa's son was on the radio at race's end. Rubens Barrichello interviewed Felipe on the podium after the actual podium ceremony. So there was a lot going on. But just a quick lead in, you know, Felipe Massa raced Fernando Alonso all race long and had him beat. Okay, he had a little bit of help with motor, but, you know, Alonso probably did have the better chassis between the two of them. And, you know, Massa had a strong points finish to finish his Formula One career, effectively.
Yeah, he had a really good weekend, didn't he? I thought it was very generous of his teammate, good old Lance, to allow himself to be out-qualified by almost a second. I thought that was great. Yeah,
yes, pure charity.
Pure charity. Massa has always been quick around his home track, and he demonstrated it again. I thought he was complaining. Well, he got held up in his first Q3 run, didn't he? Was not very happy about it. And then I didn't see what happened in his second Q3 run, but I was surprised he only qualified 10th because it looked like he could have been up with Perez and Alonso in qualifying. But yeah, he had a great start, passed Alonso and had a great battle with him and held him off. And very strong, very solid race. So who knows? I think we'll be doing this all again next year in some capacity. He seems to be the driver that doesn't want to go away ever and is still quick enough to justify a drive here and there. So who Who knows?
Well, you know, in Brazil, at a minimum, sure. I mean, it's funny to hear you say that. You know, we've kind of agreed that Massa is probably maybe 2 years too late to actually retire, and it was a real nice moment. Massa has been a fan favorite for a long time. He puts in a little bit of extra effort to reach out to the fans, and he wears his emotions on his sleeve and, you know, really shows his love for the sport in front of everybody. And so to have those moments where, you know, Rubens and he speak, and they speak largely in Portuguese to each other, and to have his son get on the radio and, you know, basically it's pretty obvious Felipe's crying as he's talking back to him. You know, there was like real nice human emotions that gives you a reminder of all the business and, you know, preparation and polish that's put on Formula One. It is a very human, extreme, physical thing to go through, and nice reminder that, you know, that there's a lot of heart that rides in these kinds of things. So I appreciated it on that level. And also, felt that it was right for Moss to have a strong result for his last Brazilian Grand Prix.
Yeah, I agree entirely. But I have to say my biggest emotion is the shock that we will have a grid without a Brazilian driver on it next year in most likelihood. And so ever since I started watching Formula One, you know, there's been a strong Brazilian presence. And, you know, I go back to the Nelson Piquet days, obviously the Ayrton Senna days, where Brazilians, you know, dominated for a period in the sport in the late 80s, early 90s. And it is amazing it's come to this, that that Brazil won't have a driver in the field next year and, you know, replaced by what seems to be a deluge of Frenchmen, which, you know, that's fine.
I like
it's
that
just...
you use a French word for the Frenchmen.
But that was the biggest poignant moment for me, and I picked up a couple of times when they did some shots of the crowd. There were kids dressed in Ed Senna gear, not anybody else. Just, I mean, Senna's following still in Brazil is absolutely off the charts, and rightly so. But to me, there's a little sadness that we leave Brazil and we won't see you know, someone of his stature behind the wheel at least anytime soon. So, which is you know, sad for those of us who enjoyed watching those guys race.
I think we didn't know each other at the time, but I imagine it was a real similar emotion when Alexander Rossi left Formula One racing and Scott Speed before him and Michael Andretti before that. It just really pulls on the heartstrings to see, you know, this entire country, this time around, the United States, not being there. It feels like an emptiness, like there's something missing. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to go a bit further back, don't you, to the days of Phil Hill and Mario Andretti to see the glory days of US drivers in Grand Prix racing, which that's a whole different subject,
isn't
it? I mean, it's a shocking situation, but...
It's actually a quick bit of irony. So first of all, let me actually follow up and say I totally agree with you. You know, there's been a couple of Brazilian misses. You know, Nelson Piquet Jr. was not quite as good as his father was, nor was...
Let's just call him controversial, shall we?
Yeah, that's fair. But also, Ayrton Senna's nephew, was it Bruno Senna? You know, he spent time in the sport. He was a lot less successful. And, you know, I think probably wasn't quite up to the sport. If it weren't for his name, I'm not sure he would have been given the chance. But yeah, certainly Brazil has had quite a few greats. You know, I still think quite highly of Emerson Fittipaldi, who
absolutely
came to the States and had a wonderful IndyCar career afterwards. And that's actually how I first got to know Emerson Fittipaldi. He's like, oh, guess he did this racing in Europe for a while too. I'll have to check it out sometime. And
his son raced. What was it? His son or his nephew?
Christian Fittipaldi. Yeah. Yeah, that was another nephew. Yeah. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Brazil has a strong. And I mean, really, even you can take. I don't know. South America as a continent. Not much representation. You know, I'm looking just to make sure I'm not forgetting anyone, but I don't think any of South America will be represented, in fact, next year.
I think you're right, yeah. Yeah. It's just become dominated by Europeans, isn't it? I mean, it's basically a Franco-German alliance with a few other people dotted in.
Well, yeah, at the moment we have a Kiwi and an Australian.
All right, a couple of Antipodeans sneaking in there. although, yeah. You know, did Hartley really turn up? All right, we'll discuss later.
But it's been Europe-centric for a while, and I don't think that'll last too terribly long. And gosh, we don't know. Maybe there's some hot rookie that somehow slipped underneath the radar that we're not thinking of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the economic climate in Brazil and South America in general is helping, is it? We all know that you need bagfuls of gold to get anywhere near an F1 drive these days. So it's going to... Well, maybe we'll have to wait for Massa's son.
Oh, well, there you go. Race results, racing itself. First of all, real strong start from Sebastian Vettel to go ahead and take the point at turn one. Bottas raced aggressively but fairly, and that turned out to be kind of the long and short of it for the race win. I thought Kimi Raikkonen performed really well. Of course I did.
His defense at the end was very stout, wasn't it? He definitely,
exactly.
He didn't really have much for Bottas, but he certainly wasn't going to be prized off the podium, and did a good job, no doubt.
I think in Raikkonen's case, he was like, look, they have pretty good champagne in Brazil. I'm not going to give that up. it's actually the same stuff at every Grand Prix, but that's not the point. They keep it colder in Brazil. I don't know. I do definitely think it's worth pointing out that turn one, lap one incident. Maybe it was turn two or three, where Ricciardo got spun around, and then a few corners later, Grosjean and Magnussen got together. So there was quite a bit of argy-bargy at the beginning of the race.
Yes, there was. Indeed, there was. So, did Ricciardo just lose it on his own over the curbs, as was speculated by the US commentary team? Because I didn't actually, he didn't have any car damage. So I think he just lost it, didn't he, and sort of then caused a complete melee behind him.
I suppose that's possible. I assumed he got tapped. That was I thought he got bumped. And obviously, depending on the circumstances, you can get bumped and not have any damage. He thought his car was damaged, and felt it out for half a lap and determined, yeah, it's probably okay. But I'm leaning to give Ricardo the benefit of the doubt that someone tapped him, even if we didn't get confirmed video footage of it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I felt a little worse for poor old Ocon, who was minding his own business and got collected by a Haas.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that, it was kind of an ironic thing that was a bit of a mourning the loss of his race finish streak.
Yeah, and he hadn't been having a good weekend up until that point because Perez outqualified him handily, which was surprising. And then
I'm glad you said that. Perez, I mean, it's kind of Central America, doesn't really count, but we can count, for the sake of argument, we can count Mexico as South America, and that there will be some representation.
Well, I think you'll find Mexico is part of North America, but, it's south of the U.S., so therefore it is South America. Well, I see your logic there.
It is plate tectonics. Plate tectonics dictated as North America.
Oh, true, yeah. It could easily migrate south over time, couldn't it?
Let's I'm trying to give South America representation. This is not.
I apologize to all South Americans that may have decided to listen to this podcast.
Anyway, moving swiftly on.
Yep.
No disrespect.
Yeah, so Perez had a strong quali,
by the way. No disrespect.
Perez had a very strong quali and was up there, and Ocon seemed to be out of sorts, and then got knocked out. So that was the end of him. But let's talk about the start from the pit lane, shall we? I mean, okay, they. They put a new twin turbo Mercedes in the back of it.
Do you have your official Mr. LL hat on? Because I feel a strong sense of Lewis love coming.
I mean, clearly, they obviously optimized the car. They spent all morning after dodging the bullets on the way to the track for the dry conditions. but he was motoring. There was no doubt about that. I mean, 5.5 seconds. Off the win, starting from the pit lane. But I don't think there's been I haven't checked, but I'd be curious to know if there's been a stronger result from the pit lane than that. I mean, you know, there was talk in the British press about John Watson having won from, I think it was 22nd or 24th in Vegas, but I think he started on the grid, right? Not from the pit lane.
I don't have any memory of that, so...
Well, no, neither do I. But yeah, I think he very much started on the grid in that race. So to start from the pit lane and be within a whisker of a win, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, quite so. I mean, you made the point absolutely. There's a good chance that not only was his car set up for the conditions, they had a little bit more time to prep, but decisively. Everybody else's car was set up for more questionable weather. So that was, that was a real tangible advantage. But still, even considering that, I agree with you. That's a very impressive result. And, he was on track to finish closer than 5.5 seconds had Raikkonen not defended so well once he caught him. So I think there would have been a good chance he wouldn't have been much more than 2 or 3 seconds behind.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed to have just used up all his super softs by the time he caught Raikkonen. And you could see, I think it was his left front was showing quite a lot of wear on the inside of the tyre. But, I think he made the point, Hamilton himself, that the top three were managing their race, right, and their tyre usage. And that nobody really saw Vettel's ultimate pace. And I think that's probably true. But even so, I think it made the race a lot more interesting seeing Hamilton and Ricciardo fight their way through from the back. And the fact that they were able, with the double DRS situation, to actually make some passes. Which I did think it was interesting when Hamilton was trying to pass Kimi. I mean, clearly he was able to use the first DRS zone to get very close into the centre S, and he did make a pig's ear on one lap where he locked up and cost himself quite a lot of time, but he certainly on no lap was able to follow Kimi close enough to be able to then have a run on him through the second DRS. So the Ferrari was working very well through that first sequence of turns that just the Mercedes couldn't live with.
What is a pig's ear?
A bit of a hash, a mistake.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, I think that's rude to pigs. I don't understand what's a mistake about their ears. I think they're lovely.
Okay. Well, apologies to all pig lovers. But, okay.
So,
but
so we've effectively apologized to, I think, everyone we need to. So we're good.
So, yeah. I mean, I was surprised overall at the lack of Red Bull pace. And Verstappen, after he had his... tire change, was flying, and he was running, he was setting fastest laps, and I think he ended up with the ultimate fastest lap, didn't he?
Fastest lap of the race, and set a new record for the race lap in doing so,
beating JPM's old lap time, right? But
that's right, and that it was a 13-year-old record. I do believe it was a 2004 spec V10 chassis that did that. So
Right, JPM being Juan Pablo Montoya.
Very correct, yes.
A South American, genuinely South American.
Yes, Colombian, yes. Yes, a Colombian South American. Not the nicest man in the world. I've spoken with him very briefly a couple times. Me being in media scrum, him being in his typical spot. And he's a bit short. Both in stature and both in stature and tone, but yeah, very capable driver, certainly. And Max, it was really funny the exchange that he had with his team towards the end of the race. They're like, stay on the tires. That's the race strategy. And he's like, no, these tires are junk. I want to get off them. They're like, yeah, but you know, it's not so good. And he's like, well, how many places would I lose if I change tires? And they're like, well, none, but, and he's like, well, hold on. And it was really interesting to hear a 20-year-old saying, this is ridiculous. If I'm still going to be in fifth place and then I get new tires, let me change the tires. And, there was a moment where I'm like, well, is his engineer 19? That is entirely logical. Why is the 20-year-old driver coming up with that logic?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that they thought if there was a safety car or something, then that would put him at disadvantage. But as you point out, the safety car would allow them to bunch up and he'd be on fresh rubber at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's not really an angle you could see that it made sense not to change tyres, especially as Lance actually had a failure on his left front tyre, didn't he? So it was clear that some of the tyres were running pretty marginally. So, yeah, that was a very odd exchange. Red Bull logic that sort of mystifies me. But there were some good battles. The Massa Alonso Perez battle was decent. What happened to the Renaults? I mean, the Renaults looked to be running strongly at one stage, and then Hulk managed to just get a point, and Sainz was out of the points in 11th. They sort of just seemed to fade away as the race wore on.
I agree. Lackluster would be the term I use. Yeah.
And of course, we had the whole STR Renault spat throughout the whole weekend.
That was insane. I'm actually kind of surprised that you didn't jump in with that, because what was amazing to me was that STR overtly accused. This wasn't subtext or any kind of backhanded. No, they just came out and said, you're trying to sabotage our engines so that you score better in the Constructors' Championship. And
this from the team that gave their best driver to Renault,
right,
of course.
And I mean, this, and I mean, Red Bull has a history of being quite cavalier with their engine supplier. Let's not forget that it wasn't that long ago that Red Bull was making similar gestures that McLaren made with Honda now. And obviously, even I, the Honda-sponsored person that you think I am, agree that McLaren is much more justified in its frustration with Honda than Red Bull was ever with Renault. But Red Bull 2014-2015 was basically just making a huge spat that we have the best chassis by far, but these Renault engines are crap. We need to get out of these Renault engines. And then they couldn't. And then, but that was only a couple years ago. And now we have STR kind of sort of doing the same thing.
Yeah, it was very strange. And it forced Helmut Marko, who's sort of the henchman of the Red Bull outfit, to actually step in and calm the waters. Very peculiar situation altogether. And, you know, it is extremely tight in the Constructors' Championship between those two. I mean, Renault could easily still leapfrog STR in Abu Dhabi. And the whole situation's rather mystifying. And I think we'll all be happy when we move on, frankly. And STR bolt those brand new Hondas and they, you know, detonate after three laps. We'll see how that relationship goes.
No. You were right. It's third in the Constructors' Championship, not detonate. Finish third in the Constructors' Championship.
Oh, finish third. Yes. No, that's right.
Yeah,
yes.
You had it backwards. Speaking of...
They have three engines for the whole of next season, you know that. So I'm wondering how quickly Honda will actually go through the three engines. Will it be the first Grand Prix weekend, maybe? Or, you know, will they get to maybe race two or three before they go through three engines apiece.
What I hear in you, Chris, is fear that that I was right about Honda all along, and that the McLarens are going to slag along and back, and the SDRs are going to rock it off, probably into the sunset, and win the championship. That's what I think is going to happen.
I've been hoping you've been right all along while Alonso and McLaren had a Honda lump in its back, but now not so much.
Yeah, sadly.
We shall see what happens.
Sadly, I am. But speaking of Red Bull, actually, I found something quite fascinating in the championship. You mentioned that Red Bull's performance in Brazil was disappointing for you. Well, Daniel Ricciardo has been fourth in the Drivers' Championship for quite a while now. And at some point, his lead was quite comfortable. But now, with one race to go, Kimi Raikkonen in the Ferrari is only 7 points behind Daniel Ricciardo. Now, obviously, the Drivers' Championship is sewn up. Lewis Hamilton has it no matter what happens.
Oh, did he win it?
Yes. Hamilton did, in fact, win it. I thought you were aware. Funny. And now, after Brazil, it's not set in stone, but pretty comfortably, Sebastian Vettel is going to get second. He's now 22 points clear of Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah.
And Valtteri is 80 points clear of Daniel Ricciardo, so he's certainly not going to finish any worse than third. But now Daniel Ricciardo has 200 points, Raikkonen 193. So if Raikkonen is on the podium and Ricciardo, you know, ends up being, you know, a few positions back, it could be that it ends up that Raikkonen does, in fact, put himself fourth in the constructors.
I'm glad you've explained to me the excitement that remains in the Drivers' Championship, because I was a little perplexed why they kept showing the standings for the drivers during the race. I was like, does anyone still think this is alive? What's the point with this?
Well, there you go.
But no, you've made it all clear. Thank you very much.
You were very welcome for that. And you know, in the future, I will provide you with a lengthy spreadsheet with many graphs and charts, as is the way of my people. Now, what I find fascinating about this is, okay, obviously I'm a Raikkonen fan. Obviously I'm a huge fan of Raikkonen's age. And, but the other thing I find fascinating is it goes Mercedes, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull, Ferrari. So if Raikkonen, does get ahead of, Daniel Ricciardo, it would be Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, Red Bull. So it's Red Bull, Force India, Force India. So anyway, there would be a lot more. And it's almost sad to say, but there would be a lot more linearity to the Drivers' Championship.
Wow. I have no comeback for that other than that's certainly... I mean, I think your earlier point about let's go for the old geezer getting into fourth in the Drivers' Championship is a better angle.
No, I'm not.
Let's have them all.
I'm not saying I'm pro-linear linearity. I'm just saying... it would be fascinating that it ended up that way because there was so much jostling in between, but it ends up looking pretty regimented.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel's had some rough weekends, hasn't he? Him and Bottas clearly had too good a summer holiday because they both struggled a little bit since the return. And you would have thought that if he could get back on form, he'd probably be able to give Raikkonen a run for his money. But I agree, the way things have been going the last few races, that's very possible that could happen. I mean, if we're digging for intrigue in the championship, we've got a couple of inter-team battles that could be entertaining. So Perez and Ocon, there's an 11-point differential there, so probably Perez has got that one. But Massa Stroll with 2 points in it, I mean, you know, could still go to the rookie potentially.
Clearly Massa's heart, I mean, Massa, he's emotionally done. He's going to go through Abu Dhabi per contract, but Brazil was where his heart remains.
Swan song.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a fair chance that Lance Stroll indeed does that.
But that second in quali, that's embarrassing, honestly. He needs to get a grip on that one.
Just for a moment, you'll pardon my cynicism here, but something tells me that he could be a second and a half slower, and as long as Dad writes another $30 million check.
Okay, I don't fear for Lance's seat. I fear for Williams's competitiveness. You know, Matt, the strong money suggests that Kubica will get the seat, and I'm very hopeful that he will.
As am I.
But now you've got a dodgy guy who's been quick and not so quick in his first season, paired with a guy that we all know was phenomenally quick when he was 100% fit, but we're not quite sure if he can still do it. To me, Williams need to have a very solid backup driver. And quite frankly, I don't know why they haven't invited Massa to be that one. He can then run the Brazilian Grand Prix again every year indefinitely.
And every year it's his last.
Every year it's this great farewell.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, this time, seriously, guys, for real. For total, for real. Yeah, I mean, look, Felipe Massa's dad isn't poor. I mean, what's his...
Neither is Felipe Massa.
How is his paycheck? I mean, let's talk dollars and cents here. I mean, look, Lance Stroll showed some seriously bright, bright spots this year.
I totally agree. But some very low ones, too.
Well... But he is still a teenager. And
so is Max Verstappen.
No, Max is 20 now. So, see?
He was a teenager for most of the season.
No,
though.
Silly. No, he was.
He was.
He turned 20 in...
couple of weeks ago.
I'll say he turned 20 in May, just to support my argument. I don't know when his birthday is, but I'll say he's been 20 for months. And
is this the alternative Formula One podcast where we make up facts as we go along to support our arguments? Yeah, I like exactly. It. This is a whole new departure for us.
I want you to just understand that my wealth of experience when it comes to age of drivers just puts me in a higher platform to just be able to make judgments such as these. I'm pretty sure, actually, that Max Verstappen is not 20. He's in his 20s. So, by that logic, he's been at least 20 for quite a while. So,
all right, okay. So, who would you have as the Williams third driver if you were suddenly inhabiting planet reality?
Third driver.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna want to have a solid backup driver next year, aren't you?
Oh, with those, I see with your those point. Two. Yeah. No, I'd throw Duresta in that role.
DeResta seems to have gone horribly out of favor. I don't know what he did with one of the tests, but he might have been epically slow because he seems to have fallen way out of the frame for a drive.
Is that so? Were there articles on that? I missed them.
Well, it just seemed that no longer... He's certainly not in the frame to get the actual race seat. So one wonders if that's now put him down the pecking order for even... Because you've got the likes of... oh, my goodness, what's his name now? Kvyat, of course. Kvyat, is he driving or not driving? He could be driving for Williams, or he might not be. So, we could have a good old merry-go-round of Williams Grand Prix Engineering.
Maybe a slightly faster version, but Kvyat's another... I mean, he's certainly not consistent, you know?
No.
I mean...
So him and Stroll could make a great partnership. Right. He could just... If you pick Stroll's to see, it's going to be quick.
If you get the harmonic balance of those two right, yeah, they could be very strong together. But no, if you want an extreme hot and cold, I'd put Maldonado back in the car. When he's fast, he's fantastic. So
you try to appease the South American listener again.
I respect is not the right word. I appreciated Maldonado for his entire Formula One career. I really did. And I certainly respected his passion and his effort that he put in. And no one tried harder than he did. And I just absolutely love it. No one tried harder than he did for like little parade show laps, just like little exhibition things that he'd do. And he'd still wreck the car because he's trying to get 10-10ths out of the thing. And so I just couldn't help but love that. And, you know, he brought on the order of $30 million as well with the Colombian oil. So Or Venezuela. Venezuelan oil, yeah.
So, anyway, we were talking about Lance, of course, Canadian, and your favorite Canadian driver was vehemently disappointed in Bottas's drive. Good old Jacques Villeneuve at it again, telling the world how terrible Bottas is for coming second to Sebastian Vettel. Didn't put a performance in, apparently. I was like, really? Did you need to pile on to the chap? I mean, Bottas finally puts a decent weekend together, gets a pole in a second, and there you are, coming out of your armchair, criticizing him.
You know, there was a video that I caught on YouTube recently that I think Formula One put on, and it was a conversation with JV talking about his championship year in 97.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how the last race went and what he had to do and all these kinds of things. You know, and for him to say what he said, I mean, he finished fourth in his championship race because he let Mika Hakkinen pass him in the last lap because he's a big sissy. And all he is talk. You know, I'll tell you what, Jack, I'll race you. Jacques Villeneuve, come to Michigan. We'll get some go-karts going. I'll race you. And we'll see who comes out on top. You can even have the baggier suit, and I'll race you. I'll happily race you. You can have a baggier suit and a guitar, and I will race you, and I will still win.
Do you think the baggy suit might actually get caught under the wheels of the go-kart at some point during the race?
As people age, right? People, they tend to get baggier in places, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what Jacques Villeneuve does. He just gets baggier in suits. So now that he's older, maybe he was one size or two sizes too big when he was properly in Formula One. But now that he's retired, maybe he's three or four sizes too big. So who knows? Maybe.
As much as I enjoy your Jacques Villeneuve rants, because they are quite amusing, I have to take issue with the fact that he was a sissy in his final race. Because, of course, he'd been Schumacher'd early in the event, hadn't he? Because Michael had decided that his only chance to win was to take Jacques out, but failed on that occasion. And Jacques had a slightly damaged Williams and yet still managed to pinch the championship. So at the time, I recall being quite happy about that.
I'm not going to completely dismiss that, but I will say that he has colored his explanation of his championship season with what he's had to say about every other driver since his championship season.
Right, right. I agree with you.
And I mean, it all started when Jenson Button was his teammate at Bar Honda, and
there's Honda.
And he just railed on how terrible Jenson Button was, and Jenson Button handily beat him. Race in, race out, over and over again. And I was like, well, this guy's a joke. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So, other epic battles that could still be decided. Alonso, Van Dorn, just 2 points in it. Could Alonso be pipped by another teammate in his illustrious career? I mean, honestly, if you'd asked me what those standings were without me cheating and looking at the table, I'd have guessed Alonso was miles ahead. Yet somehow it's only 2 points.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of, inconsistencies in terms of finishes and things like that. But I'll be honest with you, I think more and more Alonso's head is thinking of 24 hours of Le Mans. I mean, he's got 24 hours of Daytona coming up to get prepped for that, or starting anyway. And I think Alonso is thinking of other things, to be honest with you. That's my personal opinion.
No, I don't think it is it? I mean, he was on fire all weekend.
He was quite good, and he was great to watch battling Hamilton in Mexico. He was fun to watch him coming up with any little way he could to fight Massa, despite not having the power to keep up. I mean,
this is clearly a guy,
Alonso's still very, very good.
And he can see light at the end of the tunnel, right? One more race with an exploding Honda to go, and then he'll be all set. with an exploding Renault.
All right. All right. Well, let's you and I have a friendly wager here. I'm going to wager that, and I'm going to put a qualifier in. No, it's no fun that way. I'm going to wager that Stoffel Van Dorn does in fact beat Alonso in the Drivers' Championship, and if I win, you have to buy me the best gin and tonic you've had in Ann Arbor. And if I lose, I have to buy you the worst warm beer I've ever had in Ann Arbor to remind you of home.
Oh, that's not exactly a fair wager. Well, what do you, I would what do
you, wager. I thought the Brits love warm bitters, and to me that's not my thing. So I thought I was doing you a solid.
Yeah, we just like beer that's still in liquid form rather than, you know, being super cool to 0 degrees Kelvin.
All right,
and,
great.
Needs to be thawed out for a month before you can consume it.
All right, so you don't like absolute zero beer. That's a shame, but what I will do is I will find a really good beer, and then I will leave it outside in the sun for hours, and then I'll give it to you.
Well, good luck in doing that in Michigan in November. That'd be nicely chilled. That'd be delicious. Thank you. for sure. Yeah, let's take that wager.
All right.
I will definitely say Alonso is going to beat Van Dorn in the championship.
Okay. No, I haven't had a good gin and tonic in a while, so.
Excellent. So I look forward to that pint, right? Yeah. And then
you are going to be more interested in watching the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix than you have any other Grand Prix this year. So you're welcome for that.
Thank you very much. So then Constructors' Championships, I guess the battle is Toro Rosso, Renault, Haas. So we have 6 points separating those three. We talked about this, I think, in the last podcast. Renault inching their way closer. Maybe they'll just prevent Toro Rosso from running any engines at all in Abu Dhabi to clinch it.
That's right. That's right. They'll be like, oh, we forgot them.
We brought it, but we forgot the Conrod. Sorry about that. Good luck.
Or maybe something way more. It's like, oh, shoot. We thought we needed 12 head bolts. We need 14? Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Bad luck.
Bad luck. Sorry. Sorry, chaps.
So, yes. And then I think STR, well, I read that they're on the verge of announcing their driver lineup for next season, which I thought they probably better announce it for Abu Dhabi first, because who knows, it could be anyone from one weekend to the next.
God, yeah, don't get me started on that. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really good chance it will not be Brendan Hartley, but I think that considering the circumstances, Hartley did a fine job, and I hope that he has a good result in Abu Dhabi. And yeah, I will look forward to see who SDR has, and you know, it would be really interesting to have that commentary about if Honda played any role in who the drivers were, or if that was an incentive or disincentive for the drivers that might have come on.
Yeah, Honda doesn't seem to be having too much say so far in any of the discussions about who's going to take the STR seat, but maybe they're just sort of trying to lay low until the Renault debacle blows over, and then they'll get involved. But on a more positive note, Hartley is a world champion, right, in the WEC.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, good point. Fair play. Yeah. Congratulations to him. And honestly, I mean, he did a really good job. He was thrown in the last quarter of the season to a whole new circumstance. It was the first time racing a Formula One car. He's performed admirably considering all the obstacles he had.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's been hard to sort of follow his progress because he struggled a little bit in qualifying, and I don't think he's had the best of luck in the races. But he hasn't disgraced himself, and yeah, I mean, it'd be good to see what he could do with a full season in Formula One. And he had a lot more success trying to win his championship than poor old Gasly, whose race got cancelled, didn't he? He actually missed an F1 race to then. Which formula was he in? I can't remember.
Super Formula. I'm pretty sure it was the Japanese formula. Super Formula.
That's right. And, he didn't get to actually contest the finale, did he? So missed out on his championship, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. But, you know, the lengths you go to for... I mean, the Red Bull contract said do this, and you just do that, so...
Right.
Well,
so other than that, what else struck you about Sao Paulo?
Oh, to be honest with you, I was pretty focused on Hamilton and his drive from the back. And then other than that, just what Felipe Massa was going through, that was really what took most of my attention. I will say I was relieved for Vettel that he got a race win, that he could have something to look back to as a positive towards the end of the 2017 season, and to tighten up the championship points a little bit, so that when we go down in the history books and see the point spread, it's not quite so devastating. So
yeah, first win since July, which is extraordinary. Who would have predicted that?
Yeah, and July, I believe, is 48th of his career, which is, an impressive number.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, but I think for me that was kind of it. That was it. So unless you have anything else.
No, I'm looking forward to the season closer at Abu Dhabi. So we'll, it's hard to know who's going to be quick there. It got more confusing even at the end of the season, who really had the quickest car. Because Red Bull fell off the pace in Brazil, so I'm not quite sure I know who will be quick in Abu Dhabi. I'm sure it'll be close, though. It's been a good season from that perspective. It's been competitive at most Grand Prix. We haven't had the sort of domination we've had to endure for the last couple of seasons, so that's been a big positive this year.
Yeah, I think Nico Rosberg's going to come in and dominate. So, but I think that's all the time we have. So,
on that bombshell,
I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you very much for listening. Please, please take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get your podcast. Excuse me, get our podcast. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at FWCars and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/FWCars. Chris, I am very much looking forward to that gin and tonic. I'm Robin Warner. Bye, everybody.